Welcome back. I'm Jim Rome. Been talking the entire day about Damian Lillard knocking down that bomb to knock out OKC and where that leaves the Thunder and the Trailblazers. Joining us right now to break that down and talk NBA postseason is an NBA writer for Sports Illustrated, an NBA analyst for NBC Sports Boston, a boxing analyst for DAZN, host of the Crossover Podcast, SI Boxing with Chris Mannix, and Inside the Paint on SI TV. Friend of the program and a very busy guy, Chris Mannix, is back. Chris, great to have you. How are you?
I'm good, Jim. How you doing?
Great, my man. Awesome. Thanks for joining us. So take me through your thoughts last night, Chris, as Damian Lillard was dribbling out the clock from about 40 feet from the basket. What were you thinking, and then what was your reaction when that shot went down?
You know, in that moment, it was kind of hard to see what Lillard was thinking because you know, the move with Paul George defending you, a guy with five fouls who wants to be eligible for overtime, you can probably get him to back off a little bit. But, you know, Lillard to pull up from the logo like that just shows an unreal amount of confidence that he was playing with in that moment. Because if you go back and watch it, I don't know that Paul George could have played it any differently. I don't know if he could have played it any better. In that moment, he contested. It was a falling away type of shot, and Lillard just made it. I mean, you know, Paul's getting a lot of grief for saying that was a bad shot after the game. Maybe the timing of those comments could have been better, but that was a bad shot. Like, that was a really bad shot. That probably is the lowest percentage shot you can take in a moment like this. Lillard just made it a great one by finishing it.
You know, I guess you can make that point. And I would have said that, Chris, that's a bad shot a few years back. But then when you see Lillard, when you see Steph Curry, but I got to admit, and I mentioned before he came on, Chris, my favorite part about him saying that's a bad shot is that he runs alongside Mr. Bad Shot. I think it's pretty rich that he said somebody else had a bad shot when he plays with Russ Westbrook. That's my favorite part.
Yeah, that's fair. And I saw a lot of that on social media afterwards. And Russ has got to kind of look inside himself after the season to figure out exactly what it's going to take to get him to the next level. I mean, he's past the age of 30 right now, and he looks like he's regressing, you know, as a perimeter shooter. And shooting's one of those skills, Jim, that I'm convinced, and a lot of personal trainers and coaches are convinced that you can learn it. Like, if you commit a certain amount of time and effort to becoming a great shooter, you can become a great shooter. And at this stage of his career, Russell Westbrook, you know, like Rajon Rondo and, you know, to a degree like Ben Simmons early in his career, just seems okay with being who he is. And who he is an incredible talent, but as we've seen these last three postseasons, really the last two in particular, that talent is not enough to get his team out of the first round. And this was one of those series where if you can only win one game in a series like this, you've got to really reflect because they had the team that they wanted, they had the opponent that they wanted, and they still weren't able to do anything in this series. That has to be incredibly disheartening if you're part of the Oklahoma City franchise.
Oh, no doubt whatsoever. Chris Mannix joining us. So to your point, you can change, but you have to wonder about Russ. Is Russ going to change? As an example, when he signed his extension with OKC and then Paul George didn't even look elsewhere last summer, it seemed, Chris, like OKC was in a great spot going forward. Are they still in a great spot going forward?
I think they're in a spot where they are a team with a ceiling, and it's a pretty low ceiling because you were able to give them something of a mulligan this last year because the Carmelo stuff was an issue for that team, the Paul George free agency, bring all these guys together. I didn't beat them up too bad after they lost to Utah in that first round. But this year, I mean, everything that could have been going for them was going for them. I mean, they had a second full season with George and Westbrook together. Westbrook, for most of the time, was playing like an MVP for most of the season. They had Dennis Schroeder come in, who was a steal for them in the past in the last offseason, getting him via trade. They had what they needed to compete. And now, if you look at that bench, I mean, you could say that Terrence Ferguson will improve. I thought Jeremy Grant was great in this series. I mean, he had to battle with some bigger guys out there, so he might get a little bit better. But there's not that blue-chip guy on the roster that you can see ascending into a higher place that's going to make them a significantly better team. So I don't know what Sam Presti and that front office, what their first move is, because you've got these guys under contract for at least the next two seasons, but what are those next two seasons going to yield? What kind of team are you? That that to me is a very big question.
Chris Mannix joining us. And then back to Portland for a minute, Chris. It was not that long ago that they had a 10-game playoff losing streak, so it's pretty clear things can change quickly, and you don't need to necessarily do something major to change what happens in the postseason. So what does this series say about where they are right now, and Damian Lillard in particular, especially given the fact that Nurk went down?
Well, it says, first and foremost, they're an incredibly resilient bunch, but we knew that because of how they rebounded from last year's postseason. I mean, last year's loss wasn't exactly, you know, Spurs Heat in, 2012, where they lost a series that they were convinced they were going to win, but it was bad. And there was a lot of temptation, I think, and I know, from Neil Olshey, the GM, to clean house, to fire Terry Stotts, to trade C.J. McCollum, maybe even pursue trading Damian Lillard. If you're Damian Lillard, maybe some thought about asking for a trade and going to a different situation. I know the Lakers were lurking around Damian Lillard at the end of last season, but they, you know, they did what a good team should do. Know that they had a really good roster, know that they had that internal improvement that I'm talking about that Oklahoma City doesn't have in Yusuf Nurkic, who was a young guy continuing to improve, and they did that. Now, Nurkic going down just shows the incredible talent of that backcourt. I mean, Lillard gets all the credit and deserves for game five, but how about C.J. McCollum in Game 4, what he did offensively and defensively, making play after play? I'm just really impressed, Jim, with the patience that front office showed when I think a handful of other teams out there, knowing what that Blazers team has gone through, seeing that maybe they had something of a ceiling, they might have pressed the reset button. They didn't in Portland, and we're seeing the results of it now.
Agreed. I can't say enough about the front office or the coaching staff, and they stayed the course, and now look at it. Chris Mannix joining us. All right, Chris, shifting to the East for a moment. The Bucks and the Celtics handle their business, which means we get a rematch of last year's first round. Question being, how different are the Bucks from last year to this year?
Well, I mean, they're significantly different in terms of their roster, the floor spacers they added to that team, Brooke Lopez, Ersan Ilyasova. These guys have changed the dynamic, and most importantly, in terms of what's new, Mike Budenholzer's there, and Budenholzer has completely mixed that team up and made them a significantly play to the strengths of that team. So they're markedly better. The question I have with the Bucks is something that I heard from a lot of people around the league during the season, was that this was a team that was really built to play in the regular season, maybe not so much in the postseason. That there were some questions about, would these non-Giannis guys, and I'm talking about Middleton and Bledsoe and Brooke Lopez, guys that either don't have a long history in the playoffs or don't have very successful history in the playoffs, would they be able to step up when things got tough? Now, the Detroit series was not, that wasn't really a series. I mean, Blake Griffin missed the first couple of games, played on one leg for the rest of it. So I don't read really anything into that, much like I don't read too much into Boston. I mean, they played a Pacers team that, without Oladipo, really is like a 10 seed in the Eastern Conference. But for the Bucks, I think we're going to see if guys like Middleton and Bledsoe and Lopez, if they have within them to play at the highest of levels. Because I look at Lopez, Jim, and Lopez plays 30, 35 minutes a game for this Milwaukee team. You know, there are not too many guys the size and kind of that lumbering style of Brook Lopez that have a lot of success in the playoffs. You know, I think Boston will go small on them. They'll challenge Brook Lopez. And I think it's going to be interesting how Milwaukee reacts to that type of challenge.
Chris Mannix joining us. All right, so what about the Celtics? How are they different now from this time last year?
Oh, I mean, they're different from this time last month. I mean, this Celtic team just evolves weekly, it seems like. And yeah, the biggest difference is they have a closer. And they were great last year with their young guys. They played a free-flowing style. Jason Tatum stepped up. All that's kind of happening again. I mean, Jason Tatum averaged about 20 points in the first round. Jaylen Brown stepped in seamlessly, I thought, for Marcus Smart. And Kyrie closed games. The biggest edge I think the Celtics will have now that they didn't have in October, November, December is what Gordon Hayward's doing. I mean, as part of my Celtics story in the magazine last week, I wrote a lot about Gordon Hayward's involvement from month one to now, and it really is like two different players. You know, the guy in month one couldn't cut, didn't trust himself going to the basket, couldn't bounce off guys. Remember, this is a guy that the last 2 years in Utah averaged about 6 free throws per game. Now, those free throws started to tick up as he's getting more and more comfortable playing through contact. So this Celtics team is a lot different. I think it's a extremely evenly matched series. It's going to come down to somebody not Giannis, not Kyrie, maybe not even Hayward stepping up and making plays.
I love that matchup. Chris Mannix joining us. Before you go, Chris, Philadelphia bounced back from that game one loss to Brooklyn. They win four straight, including three blowouts. You know, if you look at Philadelphia from last season and this season, it seems like every single team that faces Philadelphia in the playoffs ends up hating them. Is it a coincidence, or is that just who Philadelphia is?
Well, I think a lot of it is Ben Simmons is not the most likable player across the league. I think that was reflected in a couple of those players' polls or whatever I've seen over the last couple of months. Joel Embiid doesn't make it easy by just saying whatever's on his mind. I mean, we love it in the media, but you know that stuff certainly resonates in the locker room. So I think it's focused primarily on those two guys. I don't think that you know Tobias Harris or Jimmy Butler even have much to do with it. Those two guys are just very polarizing figures. But they're stepping into this series, and Toronto's going to put them into a blender. I mean, the Raptors, especially on the perimeter, I mean, they have two of the best perimeter defenders in the NBA, in Kawhi, who might be the best, and Pascal Siakam, who doesn't get anywhere near enough credit for what he can do on the defensive end of the floor. And, you know, guys like Butler and Harris, they're going to have a hard time. I mean, you know, Siakam and Kawhi aren't Jared Dudley. I mean, you know, they're going to go out there and challenge them on both ends of the floor. I think this is going to be a really challenging series for Philadelphia to try to win.
All right, so Chris, before I let you go, I've got to get your thoughts on the Lakers, because in the aftermath of Magic Johnson stepping down, they had a chance to go outside the family, bring in an experienced front office person. Instead, it would appear that they're sticking with Rob Pelinka. In fact, in your mind, did they even do a search?
To my knowledge, they have not reached out to the top-tier guys on other teams. Now, I don't know if they've looked at secondary guys, but the top tier guys on that are the obvious names that we all know about, I don't believe that they have reached out for it. And in fact, they are doing this Jim, like a month ago or whenever Magic quit, if you had told me that, you know, weeks later that Kurt Rambis would be sitting in on a coaching meeting and Linda Rambis would be advising Jeannie Buss, I would have thought it was something of vaudeville. Like, I never would have believed that would have actually been a reality. I mean, this is the Lakers. They have infinite resources. They can hire basically whoever they want to hire. And if you think about it, the guys that would be at the top of anybody's list, they might be more available now than they've been in the past. If you're Sam Presti, you just went through what you went through in Oklahoma City, you could leave without saying you're abandoning that team. With Westbrook under contract, with Paul George under contract, the foundation for that team is secure. If you're Bob Myers with UCLA ties, you could say, all right, I took this team as far as I could. I got three championships out of it. Kevin Durant's probably going to go. Maybe it's time to try something else. The timing of bringing somebody else in to run that team could not be better. And you couple that with, you know, a blank check the Lakers could write, whoever that is. I just don't understand why they don't even pursue these avenues. Now, I'm not a big Rob Pelinka basher. Like, if you go through a search and decide Rob Pelinka's the guy, more power to you. I hear all this stuff about how, like, GMs don't want to deal with Rob Pelinka. I mean, give me a break. Like, if you want to do a deal with the Lakers, I don't care who's running it. You will make the phone call and have those conversations with the GM. And Rob Pelinka does have a good draft history over the last couple of years. So if he's the guy, fantastic. But not going out there and doing a national search is mind-boggling to me, especially when you're a team with the resources the Lakers have.
All right, I've got a little over a minute. Well said. You had NBA Commissioner Adam Silver on your new show, In the Paint, on SITV. What is your sense as to his biggest concern right now?
Well, I mean, there are a few concerns that he has, but he addressed it on my show, and he addressed it in the Sloan Conference, and that is the lack of kind of the ability for small market teams or low revenue teams, like I should say, to compete with the big revenue teams, because he's found that owners and executives, sometimes they have to choose between making a profit and having a winning team. And I think Adam Silver, as this stuff moves forward and we get towards the next collective bargaining agreement, I think he'd like to find a way to make that a little bit less of an issue. You don't have to choose between winning and making money. That's why something like local TV revenue, where I don't know what the Thunder deal is, but I know the Lakers are $180 million per year. It's a stark difference there. So I think you're going to look for Adam Silver to try to find some financial changes that can level the playing field even further.
NBA writer for Sports Illustrated, NBA analyst for NBC Sports Boston, boxing analyst for DAZN, and the host of the crossover podcast, SI Boxing with Chris Mannix, and Inside the Paint on SITV. Chris, expertly done. Really good to have you back. Thanks, bud. Have a great day.
All right.
My man is not only so good in the sport he covers, he is so good in two sports that he covers. And you can't really say that about many people in our business.